Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, folks. November 25th. Can you believe Thanksgiving is here already this week? And we hope everyone has a safe and wonderful Thanksgiving holiday week. A lot of kids are out of school, so please pay attention. You will see kids out and about in the neighborhood. Slow it down. No need to be in a hurry. We know that there's a lot of things going on. Just remember that kids will be running around this week in the neighborhoods, and just take a little bit longer and go a little bit slower. In the 12 o'clock hour, we'll visit with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll talk about holiday fraud, reasons to be thankful for our economy. We'll talk about productivity, energy independence, and global attractiveness to immigrants, and where we stand with the U.S. dollar. At 11:30, we'll visit with former Civil District Court Judge Robin Geruso. She's also a former member of the Judiciary Commission of Louisiana. There are some proposed changes that you will have an opportunity to vote on December the 7th on the ballot. And it is Constitutional Amendment Number 1. And we'll find out from the judge what she thinks about this proposed amendment. At 10:30, former state representative and chairman of the Criminal Justice Committee, former Judge Pro Tem, 24 JDC, and he's attorney at Marino and LLC. He has done a lot of work relative to the parking lot and what is referred to as the Brew Pub Project in Gretna. There was a meeting last week with the Ethics and Compliance Commission, Wednesday, about the conduct of the Inspector General, and we'll talk about what the outcome of that was and why that is and what are the next steps and where we still are having problems relative to communication. I happened to read a transcript of that entire hearing. I can only say interesting, kind of a head scratcher to me, mystifies me as to where we are here. Don't quite understand what the Inspector General was trying to accomplish here. And we'll talk more about that with Joe Marino when he joins us at 10:30. There was an article in on NOLA.com by Blake Patterson, very well done, outlining what he says was a tumultuous year at the New Orleans Regional Transit Authority. And as I read through the article, I couldn't help but reflect back. Actually, there were a couple of articles. One, this, and there was another article in NOLA.com about, you know, the circle of friends or lack thereof and advisors to Mayor LaToya Cantrell. And as you went through both articles, you couldn't help but just reflect on all of the leadership and governance difficulties that have existed in the city over the last several years. And you begin to wonder which agency in city government has not been impacted. An entirely new board coming in, a lack of confidence in the previous CEO. When you look at the article that outlines so many different things that weren't done, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, they used to outsource the running of RTA to a third party for a number of years. And between 2012 and 2019, they never did adopt, nor did they have a formal vehicle replacement strategy until 2021, I guess, when the board took over and they control within the RTA. How could that be? You're in the transportation business. You don't have a formal vehicle replacement strategy. You've not identified revenue buckets in order to support same. That is what you do. That's all that you do. I mean, when you read through this and we wonder where we're going to end up being. I mean, this is all very similar to what was going on in education, in the school system, a $30-something million mistake. The CEO leaves, the CFO leaves, everybody leaves. And we're wondering and we're scrambling and we're begging one another for money. Same thing here with the RTA, going to the council, and J.P. Morrell's right. This beggar mentality of every time that you get in trouble, you haven't done the appropriate forecasting. You haven't set out in a meaningful way to gain a better understanding of what it is that you do and how you go about doing it and making sure that you're hiring people that know what they're doing. We recently learned, as was pointed out in this article, that the RTA earlier this year issued a request for proposals from vendors that could provide coaching and consulting services for the CEO and her new leadership team. What? Really? At the very beginning, you need coaching and consulting services? You don't know enough about what the primary mission is of this organization and what to do to carry it about? And this is the turnaround strategy that's being deployed? It's an indication of less than, wouldn't you think? Or am I too judgmental? I don't know. But you tend to bring people in that kind of know what they're doing, that have turned organizations around before, right? You have a lot of people floating around out there that are turnaround experts. That's what they do. They right-size organization. They make sure that they have their revenue and their whips in place, works and processes within the organization in place. Math has no emotion, and they understand that certain things have to be done. Tough decisions have to be made. You may end up losing some of the employee base. You have to align these resources in the proper fashion. And then those folks typically last about 18 to 36 months, and then they move on because they've taken too many shots and been fired upon from the back, and they got a lot of bullet holes, and they can't survive in perpetuity, and then you bring somebody else in. That's typically the cycle of turning an organization around. Someone that has done it before, someone that understands finances, how it works, how to live within your revenue stream, how to set aside the appropriate dollars to make sure that you have money to replace the capital assets. Most importantly, in case you didn't know, buses, right? It's interesting because they don't have enough buses. They've recently added 26 new fixed route buses into service. and another three will soon join the fleet with 29. But again, we're playing catch up because we have done no forecasting for any of this. How many organizations does this have to happen to before we realize and recognize that who we vote for really, truly matters? We all completely understand the total history of decades of individuals with the Sewage and Water Board that didn't know what they were doing. They were political appointees that had not a clue. We find ourselves behind the eight ball. Code enforcement has been a complete debacle and a mess. And now we have a building right there, a couple of blocks from the Superdome. We're now compelled to close streets, right? During the Bayou Classic, who knows, maybe it'll extend to the Sugar Bowl, who knows, because we've not dealt with the property owner that owns that high-rise building, right? And it continues to drop debris. We've allowed a remedial action, temporary, because allegedly we had people that were going to purchase it and invest in that building. That has not come to fruition. So at what point in time do we step in and say, hey, you got to pay the bill. All of that debris up there that is suspect and is really challenging for us has to come down, and you have so many days to do it. Or otherwise, we're going to start to take action. How many times do we have to shut the neighborhood down around this particular building before we recognize and realize that tough decisions have to be made? People need to be held accountable. They thought that was a great investment. It turns out that it didn't. But the taxpayers of the city of New Orleans are not the ones that should suffer. Plain and simple, it's easy. And the oh, woe is me strategy should not be, you know, dragging this process along forever and a day. It's bad enough we can't get the signal lights to work. We don't have street signs in place, but now we're closing streets around buildings because they've fallen in such disrepair. We can't trust that we can allow the traveling public to travel on those portions of city streets. Then we go to the 911 system. That was a complete total breakdown in governance. We had an individual that faced criminal charges. We had all kinds of crazy things going on there. Behind the eight ball, again, public health and public safety in all of these examples compromised. We entered into a consent decree many, many years ago thinking that the federal government was just going to pile heaps of money on this city because we happened to have a sister who was a U.S. senator at the time, and there was a belief that there was enough political oomph that we were going to get the necessary dollars to turn all of this around. And what happened? To the contrary, we ended up spending, the city that is, taxpayer dollars for the privilege of having them all up in our junk, right? Great. Another failed strategy, another breakdown in governance. No credible leadership. In spite of the fact that many people said to the mayor at the time, Mitch Landrieu, that ain't going to happen. Point to one city where it has happened the way that you think it's going to happen this way, this time, in this city. And guess what? It didn't happen. Then we look at the exotic financing schemes of public pensions in the city that we still haven't come to grips with. Still a real challenge. Still a looming number out there that we don't know what to do with. We have really not a plan to appropriately fund and finance that system. It falls woefully short of everything. And every time we get one-time dollars where we could, we have a lot of discretion as to how we're going to spend it, we never have a conversation of trying to pay down these legacy obligations. There's no glitz. There's no glamour there. There's no big press conference of us giving money away, of making sure that culture bearers get grant after grant after grant after grant, and never looking to see whether or not we are actually generating a return on our investment with any of these giveaway programs that we have going on out there. All the while, the infrastructure is falling down around us. We're giving money to folks, in many cases, that rely upon public transportation, but we're failing in public transportation. Now, how are they getting ahead? How are they getting to the promised land? Have we not charted this out? Do we not understand what the necessary resources of those in the lower socioeconomic group actually need and what the necessities are for them? By not paying attention to one and going out and giving out the other. And what's interesting in this article, and I couldn't help but read it at least a bunch of times. So they point out that those at the RTA said that there have been some successes over the past year. And I quote, in September of 2024, the RTA, in partnership with Ride New Orleans, launched the Opportunity Pass pilot program providing free transit passes to Orleans Parish residents between 16 and 24 years old. Courtney Jackson, Ride's executive director, said so far they've signed up 2,500 people. There's no doubt that this is a positive thing, right? But this is the success that they look to, providing something for free and signing up 2,500 people. Think about that for a moment. Somebody's going to give you something free and then brag about how many people sign up to receive something free, and that we believe that that's something that we should judge relative to execution and success in the organization. Am I the only one that's finding something a little bit disingenuous with that? How hard is it to get people to sign up for something free? Hey, folks, you can ride for free in public transit. If you're between this age and that age, just sign up here. I don't know how many people that ride public transit in the city of New Orleans that are between the ages of 16 and 24. That might be a relevant number to look at to determine what is their success. 2,500, what is that? Is it 2%? Is it 25%? Is it 75%? How do you judge whether or not you're having success there when you know nothing about how many people are actually represented in that group? I know this is the holiday season. We're supposed to be thankful. I guess I am thankful. I'm thankful that in many respects the city is successful in spite of itself in many cases. And I guess that's a good thing. And it's a good thing that we love our city. It's a good thing that we love the nuances, the zaniness of the city, the friendliness of the city. A lot of the things and characteristics of the city that have nothing to do with government. So I guess I'm thankful for that most. Is that a lot of the things that people point to about what they love about the city, city government has yet and probably will never screw it up because they don't have the capacity to do so. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. The Jefferson Parish Ethics and
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Compliance Commission meeting last Wednesday about the Inspector General and a public letter that was issued by the Inspector General without giving any of the participants in the financing of a particular project in the city of Kenner. Those individuals, many of whom are elected officials as well as private citizens, were very upset by the fact that they were never given the opportunity to opine as to the construct of the deal. And the Inspector General, in a public letter, talked about that that there's no discernible public benefit here as it relates to the project, and that it was not publicly bid. This meeting last Wednesday gave many folks an opportunity to testify before that commission, and they made a decision. And here to talk to us about it is former state representative and chairman of the and former chair of the Criminal Justice Committee, former judge Joe Marino. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Noel. I appreciate you having me on.
So, Joe, I tried to just kind of set the stage here as to what was happening last Wednesday as it relates to the Ethics and Compliance Commission. Please backfill anything that you think I may have missed.
Yeah, so just to, incidentally, I went to that meeting, and it was my second ethics and compliance meeting I went to, the second time I've gone to make a direct complaint against the Inspector General. And just for context, because a lot of people don't know, and we keep, and at that meeting, if you watch it, they keep calling it a $10.3 million brew pub in Gretna. Or they call it a Gretna project, or they call it a $10 million project. It's not a $10 million project, okay? It's a state capital outlay funded project. State capital outlay means the parish asked the state to give us money for this project. We spell out what it is we're doing. The state approves it in 2022. We start getting money for it. We're in year three of getting money. And the part that they've hyper-focused on incorrectly is the commercial leasable space. That's just the parish has to put up at least 25% as a local match to get the state money. Okay, so if you don't put up the 25% and it's not certified and guaranteed, then you don't get the big chunk of money, which is going to build a garage, a linear park. The commercial leasable space is the local match. There's also a kiosk that the city of Gretna is putting in on. But in the end, it's about a $28 million total cost project. And the $10 million is a guaranteed part. But the project itself is great. And I could spend the rest of the hour, if you want, just telling you how amazing this project is going to be for Jefferson Parish and the West Bank. But what quickly changed once this public letter dropped in September of 2019. I thought when I went to the council meeting in September on the 25th on the West Bank, and I said, no, no, no. The information you put in this letter is all wrong. The facts that you have are wrong. And you didn't give me an opportunity to even comment on it, and you just released it to the public. So I thought after we walked through and enough people made a fuss about that to say your information's wrong, your facts are wrong, and you didn't give us a chance to comment, that that would maybe be the end of people going around waving this letter. But then it went on again, and it went on again, and it's the Office of the Inspector General and Councilwoman Van Ranken going on a speaking tour on the West Bank to every civic association and group, waving around this public letter again, to almost to this day, still doing it with knowingly wrong facts. So how's that for an intro?
Well, so I went to the public letter. I read it a bunch of different times. And what's interesting about it, it has a recommendation. And obviously there was some investigation here. They say that it's a public letter, but we'll get to that at a later date. But I just want to read what this says. It says the parish could pay off bond debt on the garage of $4.6 million. That's a whole different project, right?
Right.
This is where I have a problem. So the inspector general has decided that it's a much better use of funds to pay off existing debt than to engage in another economic development project and spend dollars, public dollars, on that project. And what I find very interesting is there's really no information, evidence, or otherwise to back up why that is. I mean, if that's the approach, if that's the mantra of the IG, then the parish basically is on stop until they pay out all their existing debt, right? I mean, that's what she's saying.
To a different project.
That's what I'm saying.
Project.
It is a different project. So the only thing you can glean from that is that she believes that the debt on all other projects should, if you carry this into all of what the parish does, that in her belief is that you pay off all the existing debt and you don't incur any new debt at all until all the existing debt is paid off.
Well, let's focus back on her actions, though, and not about whether it's a good project or not. Because again, I can explain to you in as much detail as you want.
But Joe, you're missing my point. It's not whether or not it's a good project or not. It's a financial mindset. She has come to the conclusion that a whole different project should be paid off before you even think about involving yourself in a new project.
Well, it's hard to figure out what.
And I'm not so sure that that is the role of the IG. To say as long as you are within the bounds of the bond indebtedness that the revenue can support in the parish of Jefferson, and you have a lot of experts that look there. I mean, I just pull this right off the first page of this letter.
The first page. Well, the law, though, Newell. This is where this my focus is shifting from. I'm not going around debating whether it's a good project or not because it's a great project and it's within the law. Her letter is wrong. What I'm going to is, okay, what can the OIG do? Can she investigate? Yep. Do we want her to investigate? Sure do. But the law tells her in the manual that tells her that she wrote, okay, she told us that at the ECC meeting. I wrote those provisions. Well, her manual says, this is what you can do when you investigate someone, OIG, and it deals with reports. So before you can issue a final report, the law says, revised statute 42-1161, you have to give the person that you are investigating or the entity that you are investigating a draft copy of your report where you're making your accusations, where you're putting your facts, where you're putting your findings and recommendations. You have to, you shall give them 30 working days to respond in writing. Then the law says once you respond in writing, then she has to review that, see if she has to amend her report, do further investigation or not. But most importantly, at that point, when she publishes a report, attached to her report is the rebuttal or the reply of the person that she investigated. And she went around the law by saying it's a public letter, not a report, and not gave anyone an opportunity. It was an ambush. Let's just be clear. It was an ambush, and it was intentional. So in her letter, she defames many people. She has Ricky Template quoted in her letter. She has Jefferson Facilities, Inc. in there. She doesn't represent the facts, but this is how she thinks she's getting around it. She puts out a 35-page letter, which looks exactly like a report. Okay, so what does a report look like? A report has findings and recommendations. So she said, well, it's not a report, it's a public letter. But on the first page, top of the page, it's entitled, What We Found. Well, that to me, if I'm the public, that looks like a finding. And now all I'm looking for is a recommendation, and then it's a report. And at the bottom of the page, what we recommend. So there you go. You got findings and recommendations. You absolutely violated the law in not allowing anyone to respond. And had she done that before she released it, you would have gotten about 8 or 9 written replies that would have been attached to that letter, which give correct and clarifying facts. She's still going out to this day promoting that letter with the incorrect facts. That is where it's just, she is just violating everything about her office that she's supposed to be doing. And there's no independence. And that's the independence thing is another issue that we haven't even talked about yet. Her maintaining independence as the OIG. You know, it's not just, she doesn't have to just be independent as it's in the manual. She has to have the appearance of independence too. And when you're going arm in arm with a councilwoman handing out flyers while the Inspector General, Kim Chatelaine, is getting ready to speak at the Civic Association, Jennifer Van Ranken herself is walking around handing out copies of the public letter, and they worked on the slides together that criticized the project. That's the thing that I found.
Those emails, right? I think there were emails that were referred to that asked that the councilwoman had asked the IG to review her materials that she intended to go out publicly with to make sure that they were consistent with what the IG was saying, which yes. I thought that was somewhat problematic, to say the least, as it relates
that's shocking.
To that, because that's not the role of an IG by any stretch of the imagination. But when we come back, I want to talk about this public bid. Because they said what we found is that there was no public bid. But what they didn't say is that there are alternatives in state law to a public bid. And that's actually what was used. And by the way, I think Jefferson Parish is probably working on several projects under the same construct that was utilized in this project, but no mention by the IG of that, which I think is incredibly misleading in the way that they characterize these transactions, because they never once mentioned they utilized a different vehicle under state statute. We'll talk about that when we return with Joe Marino. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with former State Representative Joe Marino about the Ethics and Compliance Commission meeting that was held last Wednesday relative to actions of the Inspector General. Joe, when I first was kind of reading this public letter and what was put out there, and by that point in time, I had already been made aware of the fact that the folks behind this project had already decided to engage in a different type of process allowed under state law. I found it to be really misleading to go out there and say what we found was that they didn't follow the public bid law, especially if they knew that you guys had engaged in what is known as a CMAR, which is an acronym for Construction Management at Risk, which is utilized and it is by probably a lot of parishes in the state, by the state itself and others, and by the parish of Jefferson. And it's curious to me that it's never mentioned in the letter.
It's something I pointed out to them about one of the fundamental flaws of it is it's not even mentioning that it's a capital outlay project, and it's not even mentioning that it is a CMAR project. But I told them that on the public record in front of the Inspector General on September 25th at the West Bank Council meeting, and told her letter's wrong. And to this day, they've never amended or changed her letter. And she's talking about if it would have been done using the old lowest bidding method, there would have been other things, and I don't see that. But again, that's because she admitted she didn't speak to a single person involved in the project before she wrote a 35-page letter about it. And if you would have asked us to reply, we could have pointed out all the things. But again, I think it was intentional. I truly believe it was intentional. And now I know why when I see the roadshow.
I was a little... I read the transcript of the meeting, and I was surprised that no one from the ECC, the Ethics and Compliance Commission, never asked of the IG, what was the downside to interviewing the folks that were involved in this process? Why would you choose to issue the letter and not even talk to these folks as to what was actually being done? I mean, I don't see a downside. I don't understand what it is unless, I mean, the only thing that I go to is a statement that she makes in her testimony about her belief, and her belief, I'm going to have to try and find it.
How about her statements that Jefferson Parish is never going to change? That we
well, that was what I was
going to. Anything negative comes out, you attack the reporter if you don't like the message.
Here it is. Verbatim. This is what she says. She talks about her time as being the director of ethics and compliance, and she served in that capacity for a number of years, and then went on to work in the John Young administration. And it's interesting because in that role, I don't know what she actually did, because she says and I've suspected, and frankly, I've come to believe Jefferson Parish doesn't have a truly positive relationship with accountability and transparency, because whenever there is a message that is unflattering or inconvenient, or worse yet, politically damning, they have an unrelenting reflex to silence the messenger and kill the message. Well, if it's fundamentally wrong, and it's not right, and you don't have a real grasp and understanding as to the financing of government, which she does not, you make mistakes. I mean, it's almost as if she's perfect, because she starts out her testimony by saying, before the committee, this process is not entirely known to me. What these council members want you to do is not entirely clear to me. Really? Although I'm incredibly relieved that at least Councilman Liljeburg doesn't want to see me removed, I'm not sure what he wants to happen, but I'm relieved that he doesn't want to see me removed. Well, who cares? But I do sort of have this belief that whatever we're doing here tonight, eyes are on us. Yeah. And I believe that how I respond to this moment, but it's not just how I respond. I think it's how you respond, meaning the committee, is going to speak to our relative commitment to independent oversight and well beyond and well beyond independent oversight. I think it's going to speak to our relative commitment to encouraging or suppressing a culture of speaking up. Well, what is she talking about? Everybody else can have oversight but her? That's what it sounds like to me, because she's not entire. This process is not entirely known to her that somebody's going to have oversight over. Incredible. We'll be right back with Joe Marino. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll continue our conversation with Joe Marino, former state representative, about the Ethics and Compliance Commission meeting last Wednesday on about the actions of the Inspector General. And at 11:30, we'll visit with former Civil District Court Judge Robin Geruso about Constitutional Amendment Number 1 that's on the December 7th ballot.